This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for David Paxton, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
The taxi drew up at the curb, and a young man emerged. He was tall and good-looking, carried an overnight bag in one hand and a pair of kid gloves in the other. He wore a topcoat and scarf, and a felt hat pushed well back on his head. Paying the driver, he sauntered through the swing doors of Paxton House and made his way nonchalantly to a waiting lift, clapping the uniformed operator jovially upon the shoulder.
Houston, old boy, grand to see you again.
Why, Master David, this is a surprise. Where did you spring from?
Yeah, I came down the morning train. Thought I'd stop by and have a yarn to the governor. He's in, do you know?
There should be. I'll take you up.
Yeah, that's the skirt.
Expecting you, is he?
Well, I shouldn't imagine so. I haven't been in touch with him for some weeks.
Oh, he'll be real pleased to see you.
I'm looking forward to seeing him, too.
Home for long, are you?
Better than that, old chap. I'm home for good. Sandra, darling.
David!
How perfectly charming you look.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I couldn't stay away from you for a moment longer, my sweet one. I simply had to come.
Same old David.
But it's the truth, Angel, I swear it. Have you missed me?
I've managed to survive.
Such true devotion. You'll be free this evening, of course.
No.
Splendid, I'll pick you up at 8.
David,
I have dinner and go on to the theatre.
We'll do nothing.
And now that that's settled, you might buzz the governor and tell him the prodigal's returned.
Prodigal's the word.
Yes?
Your son's here, Mr. Paxton.
David?
Yes, sir.
Alone or with the police escort?
Alone.
Good lad. I knew he'd manage it one of these days. Send him in, Sandra. Send him in.
Yes, sir. You may go in.
Thank you, my love. Where are we lunching, by the way?
We are.
Capital. I'll order a table and champagne for two.
I'm not going to lunch with you, David, or dinner either.
Did I ever tell you you're the most divine creature I've ever set eyes on?
The answer is still no.
Excellent. We'll make it Martelli's. I hear the pheasant superb.
For the last time, David, I'm... Well, that'll be your father wanting to know where you are.
I'm on my way in.
He is on his way in, sir.
Oh, good. Oh, I have Yates coming in at 12, then. Perhaps you'll better phone and put him up.
Yes, sir.
Should anyone else want me, tell them I'm in conference. I am not to be disturbed.
Hello, David, my dear boy.
Hello, Dad.
How wonderful to see you again. Yeah, sit down, sit down.
Dad, you're going to ask why I'm here.
Must I? So soon.
Might be an idea to get it over with.
Yes, perhaps you're right. Well, what is it this time? Money, women, or both?
Neither.
You've been arrested and you're out on bail?
Wrong again.
You puzzle me. In the past, it's always been one of those three. You're not in trouble at Oxford.
Getting warmer.
But you've been sent on?
Right.
Oh, is that all?
That's all.
Oh, for a moment there, you had me worried. What happened?
I had a slight difference of opinion with Professor Arbuckle.
And?
I clouted him.
Where?
I'm not sure, but he ended up on his back in the Norgard Memorial fish pond.
No.
It's a fact it took three of us to pull him out. Yes, I thought you'd appreciate it.
Appreciate it? It's the funniest thing I've heard in years. Never could stand Arbuckle at the best of times. Arrogant nitwit. No. How did the dean take it?
Oh, not so well. Gave me my marching orders on the spot. Said I was lucky not to be sued for assault. For that matter, I may be still.
You leave Arbuckle to me. I'll see there's no fuss. As for the dean, I'll ring him right away, if you like. Have you reinstated as soon as possible?
No, Dad. I'm afraid it's not that simple. Too many people know about it. He can't afford to back down at this stage.
Nonsense. All I have to do is to bring a little pressure to bear on
you. I'd really rather you didn't.
Oh, but my dear boy...
Well, for one thing, I'm tired of Oxford. For another, I'm just wasting my time there. I want to have a bit of fun for a change. I thought I might take a trip somewhere, perhaps, if you're agreeable.
Well, you know you're perfectly free to do whatever you please. But, don't you think it might be wiser to complete your studies before you...
What's the sense in completing my studies? I'm not working towards any goal. Oh, I know how to spend money and enjoy myself. That's all I need to know.
Well, if your mind's made up...
It is.
As you wish. But I would like you to give some thought to entering the business at a future date, though. I haven't many active years left, and I need someone to fill my shoes.
We'll talk of that another time. Meanwhile, if you can spare that delicious secretary of yours for an hour or so, I'm taking her to lunch. Oh, providing you have no objections, of course.
Why should I? She's a nice girl. Just watch your step with her, that's all. I wouldn't care to lose her as I did her predecessor. You remember Olivia?
Will I ever forget her?
Quite. As I recall, a short time before her abrupt departure, you took her to lunch, too. Such was the prelude to a case that had its beginning for us at the Missing Persons Bureau some 4 years later, in the April of 1956, when I was visited here in my office by Sir Maxwell Paxton, at that time reputed to be one of the three most powerful and influential men in the whole country. Amongst his assets, which were estimated in the vicinity of £11 million, were 13 department stores, a chain of luxury hotels, and the controlling interest in a prominent brewery. A hard man, seemingly with very few scruples, he was known to have but one weakness, and that was for his son David, whom he idolized. Indeed, it had long been an established fact in society that Paxton Jr., a notorious rake and dissolute, could do no wrong in his father's eyes. It was, therefore, with considerable surprise that I learned from the old man that David had not been seen or heard of in almost 9 months. Had, in fact, completely disappeared. It's quite beyond me, Simon. I'm at a total loss to understand why he hasn't contacted me, or at least made some move to let me know where he is.
When was the last time that you saw him, exactly?
On the 2nd of August, his 27th birthday. We spent the day together at Castledown.
Castledown?
My country estate in Warwickshire.
There were just the two of you there?
Apart from the household staff, yes.
How did he seem then?
Quieter than usual, I thought. Rather subdued.
Oh? Was something troubling him?
He said not.
Your relations with him, were they at all strained?
My relations with David have never been strained. No father and son were ever closer.
He gave you no indication at all that he was planning to go away?
No.
You were together for just the one day?
Yes. He had to return to London that evening.
For what purpose?
He didn't say.
And you stayed on at Castledown?
I was there for a week.
You didn't see him after that?
I haven't set eyes on him from that day to this.
Yeah. Was he living in London at that time?
Oh, on and off. He had an apartment in Curzon Street.
Does he still have it?
I've kept it on in his absence, yes.
Have you checked with any of his friends?
With all those I know.
You've heard nothing from him, either?
Not a word.
Is there any other close relative he might have contacted?
No.
As regards employment, did he have a job of any kind?
He had no cause to work. I gave him an allowance in excess of £1,000 a month.
£1,000 a month? Well, that's over £200 a week.
He managed to spend it without too much trouble.
On what?
To tell you the truth, I never thought to ask him.
He wasn't in the business with you at all?
No. For some time past, I'd been trying to persuade him to come in with me, but without success. Naturally, I've always hoped that one day he'll take over from me, but to date, he's displayed no inclination to do so.
I see. Now then, regarding his amorous escapade, I understand that he's been romantically involved with quite a number of women.
He's been romantically involved, as you call it, with practically every woman he's had anything to do with. I've always attributed the failing to the fact that he lost his mother when he was so young.
How old was he when she died?
Just 5. Her death was quite sudden. Bronchial pneumonia.
Has there ever been anyone in particular, perhaps with whom he might have contemplated marriage?
Well, certainly not to my knowledge. Although he did seem unusually fond of Sandra.
Sandra?
Sandra Illingworth, my former secretary.
Uh-huh.
She led him more of a chase than any of the others, and I think it rather appealed to him.
Was he keeping company with her for long?
No, for some years, on and off. She eventually became engaged to someone else. It was soon after that she left my employer.
How long ago was this?
18 months, perhaps a little less.
She's married now, is she?
I wouldn't really know. Presumably.
Would you have any idea at all where she might be contacted?
Not offhand, but it shouldn't be too difficult for me to find out. I'll make inquiries if you like.
Under the circumstances, it might be as well if we checked with her. Did I understand you to say earlier that your son had a criminal record?
I wouldn't call it that, exactly. He's been up on several charges of offensive behavior and so forth. Mostly boyish pranks, you know. And once or twice for driving with a few drinks under his belt, which is something most of us have done at some time or other.
Yes. He also sent down from Oxford, was he not?
A slight misunderstanding on the part of one of his tutors. I'd have smoothed matters over if he'd wished me to, but he had decided to leave in any case, so there wasn't much point. However, that's neither here nor there. All I'm concerned about is having him found. Pitch him back home, Simon, and you can name your own fee.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
After talking with Sir Maxwell Paxton, it wasn't any great wonder to me that his son had turned out as he had. Obviously, from the time of his mother's death, David had had very little or no parental discipline brought to bear in his direction, and had virtually been encouraged to run wild along the irresponsible path to mayhem. Yet it was very difficult to imagine why he had so suddenly forsaken his indulgent sire. An hour or so following Paxton's departure, I received word from him to the effect that his former secretary, Sandra Illingworth, was residing at an address in Ellison Road, Kentish Town. And it was to this address that I duly dispatched Agent Bob Hunter later that same afternoon.
Yes?
Good afternoon. Is there a Miss Sandra Illingsworth living here?
She has rooms upstairs, but I shouldn't think she's home from work yet.
Oh, will she be long?
Normally she gets in around 6.
Fine, I'll wait. Thank you.
It was then just 5:10, and the agent settled himself on a chair in the hall. Some 3/4 hour later, he heard a key turn in the lock, and the front door opened to admit a slim, attractive brunette. Identifying herself as the young lady in question, she led Hunter upstairs to a small bed sitting room, as he explained who he was and why he had come.
So we had Paxton checking your address, and I came straight out here.
Well, I'm afraid you might have wasted your time, Mr. Hunter.
Hmm?
I haven't the foggiest notion where David is. I haven't seen him in almost a year.
Well, according to Paxton, at the time you left his employer, you engaged to some other guy. Is that right?
Yes.
Does that still apply?
No, I broke it off some months ago.
Oh. It was because of this engagement you gave up your job with Paxton?
More or less. The situation became rather embarrassing.
And how about?
Well, I've been going out quite a bit with David, and I think Mr. Paxton rather got the impression I'd thrown him over.
And he held it against you?
Not exactly, but... Well, he wasn't any too happy about it.
Had you thrown him over?
Mr. Hunter, let me set you straight on one point. I went out with David because I was sorry for him. For no other reason.
Sorry for him?
He led such an empty life. There was nothing for him to aim at. His father saw to it that he had everything he could possibly want. He had no incentive to rise above himself.
Was never any thought of marriage between you?
Oh, Lord, no. I wouldn't have married David if he were the last man on earth.
Why, because of his father?
Because of the influence his father had on him. If he'd only shown some inclination to break away from it, a desire to stand on his own feet. But he didn't. I really don't think the idea ever occurred to him. Well, not that he was dominated by the old man, far from it. It was just that he was so used to having his battles fought for him that he took it for granted he could do anything and get away with it. Let's face it, he could.
Huh?
I once saw him strike a policeman in Regent Street. We were on our way home from a party. He'd had too much to drink, and, well, he went through the lights without stopping, almost hit a bus turning into Oxford Street. The constable on duty came over and ordered him out of the car. David got out, and there was an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I knew, the constable was stretched full length on the road. Anyone else would have been sent to prison, but not David. He got off with a nominal fine, and even that was paid by his father.
Well, I gather he was pretty free with his fist. Huh?
He won the Oxford Boxing Championship 3 years in a row. But don't let me mislead you into thinking he was the aggressive type. By nature, he was anything but.
Hmm?
It was only when he'd been drinking. That's how he came to be sent down from Oxford. He'd been celebrating for some reason, and he struck one of the professors.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
His father thought it was a big joke.
Did he?
Hmm. You know, it's funny. When he was sober, you couldn't help liking him. He was terribly popular, had more friends than anyone I know.
You say it's almost a year since you saw him there?
Yeah, I'd be getting on to that.
Hmm.
Oh, wait a bit now. When was his birthday?
August the 2nd.
Well, it was a few days before that. I remember him telling me he was going to Castledown to spend the day with his father.
This was after you got yourself engaged?
Yes, it would have been. We kept in touch for a while vaguely. There were no hard feelings.
He didn't mention anything about going away?
No.
Well, is there anybody you can think of that he might have confided in? Anybody his father may not have thought the check would.
No, not really. Unless he told Mickey Garrett.
Mickey Garrett?
Do you know the Black Hole at all in Soho?
Oh, yeah, that's the joint that's always been raided by the cops.
That's the place. We used to go there quite often. Mickey plays the piano there. Or at least he did in those days.
So?
Well, he was at Oxford with David. They were thick as thieves at one stage. David's quite a pianist himself. They used to play together on the one piano. They were wonderful. They really were.
And this was at the Black Hole.
Hmm. David only played for fun, of course. Mickey made a living at it. Every time we went there, Mickey would call him over and away they'd go.
Well, I guess he's worth a try, yeah. See, it's going on for 6:30. We should be open by this. I'll get over there right away.
The Black Hole Cabaret in Hayden Street off Soho Square was noted as being a favorite haunt for night owls. With monotonous regularity, it was raided by the police and very rarely failed to feature quite prominently in the Sunday newspapers. On his arrival there, Hunter settled himself at a table in the corner. Business was slow and he counted only 7 other customers. Soft music issued from a loudspeaker above the bar. There was no one at the piano, and ordering a drink, the agent asked to speak with the manager, who joined him a moment later. A dark, thick-set man with smooth, slick-backed hair and a gleaming smile.
Good evening, sir. You asked to see me?
Ah, you the manager?
Arturo Gomez at your service.
Bob Hunter.
A pleasure indeed, sir.
You employ a pianist here, I believe.
Yes, sir, from 7:30 onwards.
Would his name be Mickey Garrett, by any chance?
No, sir. Mr. Garrett is no longer with us.
Huh?
He left us some time ago. I understand he is now in Paris.
Paris? Doing what?
He's playing at a small nightclub there, I'm told.
You don't happen to know the name of it, do you?
Not offhand, no. But I can soon find out for you. Excuse me for just a moment. I'm sorry to keep you, Mr. Hunter, but I have the information you require.
Uh-huh.
The name of the nightclub is the Rouge et Noir.
Rouge et Noir.
Unfortunately, I was unable to ascertain its exact location, but I can tell you only it is somewhere in Montmartre.
At that stage of the investigation, our Paris agent being unavailable, there seemed little point in Hunter journeying to the French capital for the sole purpose of questioning Mickey Garrett, who had merely been suggested to us by Miss Illingworth as being a possible source of information. During the next 5 days, the agent checked with no less than 57 people, all of whom had at one time or another been friendly with our quarry, but none of whom was able to provide us with the slightest clue as to his whereabouts. At length, having exhausted all the other avenues, our interest once again centered upon Mickey Garrett, and with the aid of a Paris phone directory, we managed to obtain the address of the Rouge et Noir.
Just as well I can speak French.
Yes, it certainly is, Hunter.
Here we are. 82 Rue de la Croix. Like
oh,
that?
Yes, indeed. That's
It's off the Avenue Saint-Michel.
Yes, Sherry. He would be on holidays now, just when we need him.
He'll be back in the job next week. I suppose we could shelve it until then.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Chief. I'd rather get it over with. You know I hate leaving things hang.
Well, I wasn't aware of that.
Hmm.
All right, then, I'll have Pauline reserve your seat in the first available plane. On his arrival in Paris, at last 8 o'clock the following evening, Hunter took a cab direct from the Bourget to the Rue de la Croix, alighting at the entrance to number 82, above which was a flashing neon sign, Rouge et Noir. Checking his coat in the foyer, the agent made his way to the bar, taking in his surroundings at a glance. It was a typical Paris cabaret, crowded, smoky, dimly lit. On the floor, a more or less nude girl was modestly fanning herself with a feather, the unobtrusive accompaniment of a 6-piece orchestra. Her act met with a moderate round of hand-clapping, and she skipped out of sight. To be replaced for what appeared to be a 3-legged man with 2 heads. At once there was loud applause. There followed a brief comedy routine between the 2 heads, which was capped off by a bout of buffoonery and a small piano. As Hunter looked on, he heard the barman's voice behind him.
You've got magnificent Nathan, with you.
Huh? speaking to me?
Pardon, I said they are very good, yes.
Oh, yeah, you. Yeah, I didn't go very much for the patter, but I'm sure not those 88s around. Say,
Won't you?
Well, one of them doesn't happen to go under the name of Mickey Garrett, does
he? You know him?
No, but I came out all the way from London to get acquainted. Now, tell me, who's the other guy?
Ah, he too is English. Very clever. His name is Paxton. David Paxton.
Oui, qu'est-ce que vous voulez?
Hunter's the name, Mr. Garrett, Missing Persons Bureau.
Missing person?
Sorry to intrude, but I have a message for David Paxton.
Changing for the next act. And we're on again in a few minutes. You'll have to come back.
Don't want me.
Mr. Hunter, this is from the Missing Persons Bureau.
Your father sent me, Mr. Paxton. Spare a minute.
Motioning the agent to enter, David Paxton asked Garrett to wait outside. And a moment later, seated on a footstool at one end of a tiny dressing room, Hunter was explaining the whys and the wherefore. Present.
I really came here to see Garrett, hoping he might be able to give me some clue.
Well, I'm sorry everyone's been put to so much trouble. I suppose I should have written to Dad, but did he come here post haste, waving that checkbook of his, full of the best intentions? I'm trying to make a go of it without him being around to catch me if I fall. I don't think he'd understand if I tried to tell him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure I understand it myself. It's just that, after the best part of my life down the drain, I think I finally found a foothold. What's more, I've done it without Dad's help.
Good.
When Mickey first suggested the idea of me teaming up with him, I told him he was off his head. And I wouldn't stick it a week. But he kept at me till I agreed to give it a fling. And it worked, Hunter. For 8 months now, I've been under my own steam, earning a living, making my own way. And I can honestly say I've never been happier. Will you tell Dad that?
Oh, yeah, well. Pleasure.
And ask him not to come here.
Huh?
For a while, anyway. I'm not sure if I've built up enough reserve to resist the temptations he may place in my path. When I'm ready, I'll send for him or go back home, whichever I decide.
Hurry it up, Davey. We're on in a minute flat.
No, coming. Well, I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me, old boy.
Sure, you're not wrong. I'll get back out front. And I can see the rest of it, yeah.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
The following day, back in London, Hunter conveyed David Paxton's message to his father, who has always agreed to abide by the young man's wishes. As events proved later, he acted wisely in doing so, for David Paxton was destined to make a very great success of his new career. In the ensuing 12 months, he and Garrett made great strides. They're now top performers in their field,
and the indications are that their star will continue to rise. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon, inviting you once more to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you not goodbye, but simply au revoir.